Today, Ben Yeager is going to tell us something about them, something about othering, something about how do we build the picture of our enemies. He was born and raised in England and then moved with his family to Israel. Then he joined the Israeli forces for some time, and then he left Israel to be an advocate for peace and friendship between us and them and the supposed enemies of ours. I'm not going to say a lot what he's going to talk about. So it's, is there really a them? Please, Ben. Thank you.
Hello. Can you hear me? Okay, cool. So before we start me talking, I've just arrived literally by bus and all the way from Frankfurt today. So I've been on a long journey today and before. And before I start talking too much, I'd like to just drum a bit for 5 minutes and just for you to just arrive here in this tent. Is that okay? Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you all for turning up. Thank you, Sara, for inviting me to come to Fusion Festival. It's truly an honor to be here, and wow, what a sight. What a place to come to. I normally go to festivals to have a party, so I'm going to avoid partying this time. And I want to, in this talk, spend some time together and through my story to invite you to consider this question of, is there really a them? And just to clarify where this question comes to me and why I feel that it's important to me to ask this question has come from my personal story. And I think also in terms of our collective story right now of a lot of polarization and othering going on in our various societies around Europe and all over the world, where it seems to me that there's a lot of pointing towards another group of people who are causing something to us, different kinds of them, and we are questioning our very identity, and we are questioning other people's identity in all sorts of ways, whether that's sexual identity, whether that's religious identity, whether that's culture, whether that's based upon the land we live in, all sorts of times where we are drawn towards examining this question. So I'll start with my own personal journey, and then I'll invite you to ask some questions if you have some. So I was actually born in England a long time ago, and I was born into a Jewish family, mother and father, both Jewish, with history of family who lived in Poland and in Russia. And in Poland, my family, quite a lot of my family, were lost in the Holocaust. But just to be clear, as I grew up as a child in England, I knew nothing about this. I knew nothing of what it meant to be Jewish. I knew nothing of what it meant to be in the Holocaust. I knew nothing of the history of the people who were called my people. So at the age of 8, my parents announced that we were moving to Israel. And I had never heard of Israel. I never knew of its existence at all. So I was quite surprised to move from a very small town in England to move to Israel. And my father tells that when he put his feet on the land of Israel, he came home. All I remember at that point was, this is a very hot country where people talk a bit funny. That's all I can remember. And quite soon after I arrived into Israel, two things happened to me, which I think shaped my whole journey onwards up till now, pretty much. First of all, I was separated from my mother. For various reasons, she had to come back to England, and I was separated from her for the rest of my life, really. I saw her maybe twice a year. And another thing that happened was a war broke out in Israel. A war between Israel and all its neighboring countries, 1973. And when this war broke out, suddenly all the men disappeared from where I was living, and a very strong message was portrayed to me as a young man, from a young boy from England, and that was one of having an enemy, the Arabs, as they were then known to me. An enemy who their sole purpose is to try and push all the Jews in Israel into the sea. So if you can imagine, it's quite a strong message. But similarly to my mother leaving, it created a sense of separation inside me, a sense of not seeing myself as part of something, but seeing myself as separate from something. So this is how I grew up, with this image, this knowledge, this message of enemy. And throughout my childhood, despite the fact that I saw Arabs working in the fields in Israel, building the houses in Israel, I was still told that they were my enemy. So at the age of 18, when all Israeli young men are drafted into the army, I volunteered to go to the paratroopers to become a fighter. I was a healthy young man, and I was well-conditioned and well-brainwashed to believe that I had a job to do, and that was protect my country against this enemy that I had been told about throughout these 10 years. And when I went to the army in 1983, was the first Lebanon war, which meant that we were inside Lebanon, and we were policing civilians, and we were confronting this enemy, although we couldn't quite see them anywhere. And I quite soon had a sense of confusion. I had a sense of some sort of, I suppose, as I look at it now, as a kind of natural confusion. And one of my earliest memories when I was in the inside Lebanon was guarding a makeshift prison that was made in Lebanon to imprison young men who were inside a hole. It was very makeshift, it was very basic. And I was guarding these young men. And I looked down into this hole, and holding my gun and with all my soldier gear, and I was wondering, what have these young men done? Why were they in prison? Why were they so different from all the young men I'd seen before, I'd played football with or against, who had built the houses, worked in the fields? And no sooner had I had that thought of, if you like, compassion or wonder, the brainwashing in my head kicked in and said, forget about it, they are your enemy. They have done something to threaten you. So this confusion continued throughout my service, and I carried out many different orders that I would prefer not to remember, but they were there. Until I came to very much towards the end of my service, and as part of the operation of the Israeli army to withdraw from Lebanon, we went back into villages to flush out Palestinian terrorists. And on this particular mission, I found myself at the end of the action given the job of guarding one young man back to being investigated by the secret police, sitting about 2 meters away from him in a van with an Israeli driver in front of him. And my commanding officer said to me, if this man moves in any way that threatens you, shoot him from 2 meters. And this man was cuffed by his hands, cuffed by his feet. He had a sack over his head. He couldn't hurt me, even if he tried. He was shivering with fear. And in that moment, I asked myself a question. If I was to shoot this man, I realized that I would not only be killing him, but I would be killing any semblance of humanity inside myself. I could no longer see myself as a human being if I shot this man at such a distance. And you know, I've told this story a lot of times. And every time I tell this piece, I remember it exactly as it was. And also a piece of information, for 20 years, I had blocked this memory out of my mind until I sat with a Palestinian friend right next to me, like he would be here, right here. I remembered it. The following day, I went to my officer and I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't be put in these situations anymore. I don't care if you put me in prison. I don't care if you throw me out of the army. Anything you want, I am not doing this anymore. And luckily my officer saw me as a good soldier and he said, look, just take your stuff, go home, you're released from the army, I had 3 months left, and don't speak to anybody about this. So that is what I did. I went back home and I was released from the army, and I left Israel within 3 months and I swore to myself that I would never carry a gun again, never. I'd never be in that situation. But of course, the brainstorming was very, very strong. So over 20 years, I was seeking something to heal me from this story of separation that I had been given through these two big events and through these ongoing symbols and events that happened to me. And I danced, and I went to therapy, and I met my partner, who asked me lots of questions. My wife of 27 years, who I'm still together with, thank goodness. And she and our relationship was the key to understanding something about this sense of separation. So in my 40th year, I went to do a ritual, a firewalking ritual. And I don't know, has anybody done a firewalking ritual here? Yeah? So you'll know that at the beginning of it, you prepare by meditating and looking for a purpose in your life. And I just sat there and was seeking this meaning, this purpose, this reason for being here on this land. And suddenly, very clear words came to me. And that was, end the conflict inside yourself. End the conflict in your relationship with your partner, because there was a lot of conflict along the way. And end the conflict in Israel and Palestine. Small task. And I then sat with that for a while, danced with that a while, and then came to walking on the fire. And I was shouting out these words as I walked up and down this very, very hot fire, burning my feet, or being kissed by the fire, as some people say. And something inside me just opened up. Something in me was starting to heal. And the following morning, was sitting at breakfast, and this woman came up to me and she said, here's an email address. I think you should get in touch with this guy. He's created a movement in Israel called Combatants for Peace. And there are Israelis and Palestinians who are coming together to try and end the occupation and find a way to make peace. And I contacted him and I wrote a long email to him explaining my story. He thought I was a bit crazy walking on fire, but 3 months later I met with him, and that's when my journey as a peace activist started. That was 10 years ago now. And throughout that time, I sought to understand what it was at the center of this separation, this sense of having to other people, having to separate from people who, as I discovered through my peace activism, were not my enemy. That the whole story about Palestinians being my enemy, that the whole story about them wanting me destroyed and annihilated was no longer true. There was no fear of being annihilated by these people, because they became my friends. They became my brothers, my sisters. And I'll always remember, the first time I went into the West Bank, I came and I had to pick up my Palestinian friend to get me into the occupied territories. And we drove through 3 checkpoints and we arrived at his house. And no sooner had we arrived in his house, he said, give me the keys to your car. And I had hired a car, and you're not supposed to drive into Palestine with your car, it's against the law. And he said, just give me the keys, I need to go do some work. And there I was, a very early young peace activist, meeting my enemy, and he was asking for the keys. And I was scared. I was really scared. But I was trying to make peace, so I gave him the keys. I went up into his house. I sat and I watched very violent Turkish television with all of his family, who nobody spoke any Hebrew or English. And I was with my wife, and my hands were sweating, and I was sweating, and it wasn't just because of the heat. I was so scared. I was sure that the legacy that I was taught all these years was going to come true, that I was going to be murdered right there and then. And when my friend Noor came back, he threw me the keys and said, do you want a cup of tea? And then we had lunch and we sat there and I learned about him and about his family. 3 months later, he came to my house in England and I said, Noor, you know that event 3 months ago? were you testing me? And he said, yeah, I was. He said, what the issue really with the Israelis is that you need to take the occupation out of your heart. It's not here, it's here. That was my lesson number one about this trying to reunite opposites. And recently, in the last 3 years, I created an organization called Moving Conflicts, in which I've been investigating through various means, through dance, through talking, through other kinds of means of facilitation, that question of who is this them that we keep on creating? Who are these people who we have to externalize to understand something about ourselves? Why are we doing this? What is it serving us? How is it helping us to understand our humanity? What are we doing it for? And why are we doing it? And I'm still on that inquiry. So I want to be very clear with you. I don't have the answer. You do. We do. And I think that there's something about trying to find an understanding that everybody that we look at, everybody we're with, everybody who offers us something, whether that's the hardest thing that we can be offered, is offering us a gift, is offering us a mirror of ourselves. So even the most extreme versions of them, so let's take examples like Trump right now. Let's take examples of, yes, everybody smiles when his name comes up. Or the refugees who are traveling all over the world, who are coming into different countries and trying to find refuge. Syria, what is keeping this story going? And how can we undo the story of separation? How can we realize that there is no separation? There is no us and them. There is only we. We are connected. So if we start to examine the relationship we have to everything, whether that's between human beings, between human beings and nature, or between countries, or between nations, or between religions, we can start to see the commonality between all of us, the commonality of our experience. And we can start to find the ways to reconnect to our essential experience of being part of something, as opposed to being in control of something, or trying to beat something, or try to win somewhere. And I know the World Cup's going on, and I know that Germany are no longer there, sorry. But it doesn't mean that we have to other them. So that's the kind of opener for our conversation. So what I'd like to invite you to do right now is, if you could, turn around to somebody sitting right next to you, who maybe you don't know, hopefully, and just turn around and face them, if you can. And if you're not in a two, but you want, yeah, it's okay, good. Is everybody with somebody? Sit in a three as well is good. Okay, so one at a time, I'd like to invite you to take a minute or so to simply say your name if you don't know each other, and to tell a short story in which somehow this kind of othering has happened in your life, either to you or where you have done it. And we've all done it at some point in our life, whether that's with an ex-partner, or with a friend, or with a whole group of people. Just tell them a short story about that. And the person who is listening, simply listen. It's not a conversation. So we'll have about 2 minutes per person speaking, and then we'll pause, and we'll have another 2 minutes for the other person, and we'll have another one if it's a threesome. Is that clear to everybody? Is anybody not clear? Great. Yeah. Shall I repeat the instruction? So one person will speak and tell a story in which they were either othered or that they othered other people. So they kind of talked about them as opposed to your own experience of them. Yeah? So tell a story. One person will speak, the other person will listen, and then you'll swap around. And make it as personal as you can. And the people listening, really listen deeply. It's something that we're not trained at anymore, but really take an opportunity. So, first person, off you go. So just one more minute to complete this story. Just one more minute. Okay, so thanking this first speaker, saying Dankeschön to this speaker, and changing round, the second speaker now, Swap round the roles. So one more minute to complete this story. Okay. So, just to check, the threesome, have you all told the story, the three of you? Have each one of you told, or just two? You did three, great. Thank you so much for managing that. Thank you. Thanking your partner. Thank your partner. So, we have another microphone for down here, yes, sir? Yeah. If people want to ask questions or reflections. So just my invitation to you is reflections on how it was to hear those stories and to share those stories, but also any questions you have for me. So we'll mix it up because we have, what, another 10 minutes, I think, something like that? 10 minutes? How much longer have we got?
We have 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay.
So we can take one comment on the stories that were just told, and then maybe two questions to you.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect, okay.
Does anyone would like to
one
comment
or two
or share?
Comments.
Yeah. Would anyone like to comment or share things about the story they just heard
either listening,
or told?
Either listening or speaking, whatever you would like to share. How was that experience? What did you learn?
In 45 seconds.
Okay.
Hi. The experience were quite similar. I mean, I didn't met her before, and we never spoke before, and she told me her story, and I told her my story, and it was similar, the things that were going on in our heads.
In what way was it similar?
Sometimes you have these pictures in your brain, and you think like, oh my God, but even if you're not aware of it, and then you get into a situation, and then you get scared and think like, oh, is that really me? Am I really thinking like that? Like, why? Because I thought, like, the other ones are like that, and I'm, you know, neutral and don't have opinions about people. And then you get in this situation, and you go like, wow, okay.
That's what I did.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good, thank you for being honest.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That.
Thank you so much.
Any other comments?
Well, now we can maybe take questions to you.
Sure.
Anyone would like to ask Ben some questions? One question.
You mentioned dancing in your work. I was interested in what kind of dances you were doing there.
So those who want to experience what kind of dancing I do will be here tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning. That'll be funny. So movement medicine is the practice which I teach, and it's a movement meditation in which we're invited to check in with how we are really right now in our body, in our hearts, in our minds, and to enable us to give whatever is going on in our heads, in our beings, in our past, in our present, in our emergent future, some space to move, so giving it back to our body intelligence as well as our mind intelligence. So movement medicine is a methodology. I bring content around conflict, predominantly, around authenticity, around clowning, and being a fool, being able to realize that we need to stop taking ourselves so seriously. And as a serious action, we can take ourselves a bit less seriously and be less knowing. Because I believe that in our knowing, we get in the way of just being. And that's the dance enables us to do that. So if you want to experience a bit of that tomorrow morning, then 9:30 till 11. Is that right, Sarah? 9:30 till even this very space. So please join us. A few good tunes will be played, I promise. I hope, anyway. Anything else?
Yeah. Do we have other questions to Ben? Maybe one last one we can... No? Okay. I can ask you one question.
Go for it.
And I would go back to what you said in your story. It might be a personal question, and it might be as well very political. So could you maybe try and answer me in a couple of minutes, and then we can talk later if you like. So how do you see yourself as a human being in this constellation of the world that we live in? Of course, you're not responsible for the world we live in. No one is. Everyone is working to make something. But how can we say that the conflict, especially in Palestine and Israel, is still, first of all, something normal in the world, something that we talk about as if nothing's happening? And second of all, how can we talk about it, especially in a German context, without being, let's say,
scared,
despised, or you know, accused of anti-Semitism and accused of various things?
Where are you from, Yasser?
The others. I'm from Syria.
Thank you very much. I think you've put the finger on it, like one big finger. What I learnt through my experiences and through my work as a peace activist is that by calling any group of people a something, terrorists, anti-Semitic, is belittling the potential inside each one of us to transform that story inside ourselves. And that's why we forget, and that's why we trivialize, and that's why the masses, if you like, the collective image and the collective ease in creating separation between us is very prevalent right now in our societies. So it's much easier to see Syria as their problem, or your problem in this case, as opposed to our problem. It's very easy to talk about the Holocaust happening between Jews and Germans. It did not happen to Jews. It happened to all humanity. The Germans carried out what they carried, your ancestors carried out whatever they carried out. And the only way for us to free ourselves from the prevailing story that as a result, Jews are victims, Israel is a victimized country, and therefore everybody is anti-Semitic. The only way to get away from that story is to heal the notion that what happened in the Holocaust somehow happened just to the Jews. It didn't just happen to the Jews. In Jewish tradition, there is a blessing and a mitzvah, which means it's a purpose, which is to heal all people. That is written. It's written that that is what Jews' job to do. And that has been lost in Israel right now. It's been forgotten, that blessing. And that's a blessing we need to remember, because what Israel are doing in Palestine and in the region is extremely dangerous, not just to Palestinians, but to Israelis themselves, to the whole moral fiber of Israel. So that forgetting comes from the same sense that I'm separate from the Palestinians, that somehow, and I no longer believe that I am separate from the Palestinians. I no longer believe that it serves me in any way whatsoever to think of them as dangerous or threatening to me, my family, despite the fact that my family still believe it back in Israel. So that is my work to do that.
Thank you so much for your answer. We're going to take this as a closing statement. Thank you so much, Ben, for being with us, and thank you so much for the audience for being here. We're going to make a small break and come back with Your Body and My Body is a Honeypot. Join us later. Please take cards and flyers about Ben's work.